Welcome to the Four Podmen with me, your original old school new host in the Dynamo, Kelly. And welcome, everybody. I'm not going to do the talk today because we figured we'd go old school here just for the crack, just for shits and giggles. And we'd have me host the show today, give Niall a little break and let Niall have some fun. What we decided to do today, as you can see in the background, I had this epiphany, lads. I had this vision. I was listening to the great Conrad Thompson, obviously friend of the show, friend of the network. And I was listening to him talking to Jeff Jarrett. If anyone hasn't listened to it, by the way, shout out, check it out, My World with Jeff Jarrett. And I had this idea when I was listening to Jeff Jarrett, I was thinking about Jeff Jarrett's career, and I was saying, you know what? Jeff Jarrett's actually quite underrated as a worker. When you think back on some of the matches he's had and what he's achieved and stuff, and he's not talked about enough. And I thought, right, here we go. Top 10 underrated wrestlers of all time. And I text you guys into the group that we have, and we said, yes, let's go for it. So today we're going to do top 10 underrated wrestlers as part of the Dynamo Podcast Network. Before we do anything, we have to keep the lights on. And yes, I have pink lights in the background, but to keep these pink lights going for you guys and gals out there, we need your support. I need you to like, subscribe, hit the bell notification, share, comment, whatever it is that you need to do. Do it for us. Isn't that right, Noel?
Spot on, yeah. 100%.
Absolutely. You always get that one better than me. I'm always like, for me, really, the people that really know me, it's just fucking like the video if you like it or not. Exactly. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I have the intro down for the show perfect. It's like Noel knows exactly how to do the bell knob. This is from Dynamo to you. Just fucking like it if you like it. If not, whatever.
Just like it anyway.
Just like it. Tell us you don't like it. Of course, audio is available everywhere. Anywhere you listen to your audio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, everywhere. So without going on too long, let's get into it, boys. Darren, of course, you are you're a pod man now. So for the concept of it is kind of true, isn't it? That when we think about it and when we look at the kind of history of pro wrestling, there's a lot of names out there that we know, and people go, because when I was trying to put my list together, a lot of names out there, we think, are they underrated or are they not? But I suppose where I'm coming from is, like, there is names out there that technically are underrated in terms of what they achieved in their career, or I suppose how they're remembered. Would that be right?
Yeah, I think so, man. When I was obviously putting my list together, you know, you're drawn between who do I think was maybe overrated, and, yes, and then who's just an absolute superstar and is maybe rated where they should be. And then where's that little belly of our little pool of wrestlers underneath, you know? Some of the ones I mentioned, you may say, oh, are they underrated? But I might be coming at it from a different angle, and what you say, maybe they didn't necessarily achieve all they should have for various different reasons, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Noel?
Yeah, I was kind of the same. What I did was I looked at it, and I looked at various different wrestlers, and I said, should they have achieved more? Should these guys potentially have been world champions or whatever it is? Mm-hmm. And what I did was I looked back at them then and tried to have a look and see, well, why didn't they achieve it? And was it that the company underrated them, or the public underrated them, or the fan base underrated them, leading to whatever it was? And that's how I kind of put the list together. In terms of, so when we talk about it underrated, the, you know, there's a close connection there between underrated and underachieved, if you like, because
yes,
in the business that we love, pro wrestling, underachieving is generally because you're underrated, or, you know, maybe if you have a bad attitude or something like that, maybe lends itself to it as well. But generally because the company either undervalues or underrates you. And that's where I kind of came from with my list.
And you've also got the, you know, the various different companies, because maybe you are highly rated in one company and you are very maybe mismanaged or underrated in another company. So,
yes,
you know, it's difficult to, if we had said we were only doing WWE, you know, or if we were only doing WCW, or if we were only doing New Japan, or I think that might have made stuff a little bit easier. But you look across the board, guys had maybe good careers in certain places and then didn't have them in other places, or guys didn't have great careers in one place and then had phenomenal careers in other places, you know?
And that's a really good point that you make, because when we look at people, like, say, you know, a lot of WWE fans and the modern fan, which is fine, because that's what we're aiming for. We're aiming for the modern fan who like a little bit of the old and a little bit of the new. And mm-hmm. I suppose on your point there, Darren, anybody who knows Hacksaw Jim Duggan before he was Hacksaw Jim Duggan, looking at his Mid-South stuff, I mean, you're talking about a catch-as-catch-can phenom. You know what I mean? And Noel, you know exactly what I mean by that.
Yeah.
Like, so a lot of these guys did. It's like, listen, Jerry Lawler made his millions out of a career in one state in America. It's like these country and Western singers, you know, all of a sudden they come on our periphery here in Europe and you're like, who's that guy or girl? They're like, oh, they made their living in Texas and they're billionaires. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's like, so it is what it is. I'm looking forward to this. So why don't we get into it? I think the best way to do it today would be to go round for round. Like always, do you want to do it in any particular order? We don't necessarily have to say yay or one or none. I think it's just we give our 10 one by one, and you know, the people can tell us. That's where they can like and comment.
Come on, Eno, start us off. You start us off, Eno.
You want me to start you off? Okay, fair enough.
This was your baby. I want to hear you first, Eno.
Right. Well, I'm actually going to start off with someone modern, yet not really modern, but still here today. And I'm going to go with Christian. I think Christian is one of the most underrated performers of all time. Edge has always been the guy that people have got, you know what I mean? I don't know whether he just had a better hairdo. I don't know. They both had pretty nice hair, in my opinion. But I suppose Edge had the nicer hair. I think Christian, even, and the reason I'm going to pick Christian is, like, even when I look at the first episode of Rampage when he worked with Kenny Omega, you know, if you look at what he was able to do with Kenny Omega, and this isn't a slight on Kenny Omega, it's actually more so a tribute to Kenny Omega in a lot of ways. He was actually able to kind of work with a veteran, which that's what Christian is now, a veteran, and able to have a pro wrestling match. And Christian was able to kind of bring him down to that level. Let's slow everything down a little bit and let's actually tell a story here. And then, unfortunately, he's just, you know, hanging around with the Jurassic Park Express. But, and it's the story of Christian's career. Like, I do believe he is main event level talent, because you put a mic in his hand, he can go with anybody, I think.
Yeah, I'm actually, Christian's on my list. Yours.
Yeah.
So, there. Well, that's okay. Super to start with. But what I will say is, and I think this is the difference between maybe the good and the great, is for some reason, I just gravitated to Edge a little bit more. And I think he was a slightly, you know, because obviously they were together in the Brood to begin with and stuff like that, you know, and then they were together as the tag champs and they were in there at the Hardys and stuff like that and Team 3D and everything. And like their stuff was unbelievable. But there was always something just a little bit edgier about Edge that got you to buy into him as a character a little bit more than maybe Christian. And I think that's where the separation for me was, because, you know, like, I think Edge is just phenomenal. He's certainly not one of the underrated ones for me, because I think he's up there, you know.
For me, like, it's funny that you say that, because for me, like, I think technically I think Christian's a little bit better in his movements in the ring.
Possibly.
In the things that I look for, you know, and it's not like it's not a wide gap, you know what I mean? It's just, I think some of the stuff he does are a little bit snappier. I think
he had a really great run as that TNA champion as well.
Yeah.
Like a really great run, you know, and really. He made himself a huge star in TNA. The way he kind of angled it as well and stuff like that, you know, but it was just, I don't know, I just felt like fans didn't believe in him the way they believed in Edge. You know what I mean? Maybe, is he ever...
I think he was never marketed as well. And I think that's probably you know, a little bit at the fault of the people on top in WWE as well, because I remember at a time a lot of fans were going, Christian should be the guy as well. Do you know what I mean? That feud with Christian and Edge should have happened a long time ago when they were both on top. Would you agree? I think that should have happened. You know what I mean? That could have been your Bret and Owen story almost. But no, that's my first pick. So let's get on to your pick, Niall. Why don't you take the next one, and then Darren can follow up.
Yeah, no problem at all. Mr. Perfect, who I think was really underrated.
That's one of those that fits in with Darren's thing, doesn't it? Where is he underrated, or is he? You know what I mean?
And actually, he's also on my list. Yeah, but he was one of the ones that I went, and I suppose it's only from an achievement point of view, you look and go, maybe he didn't achieve what, well, not maybe, he didn't achieve what he should have achieved, because he was an absolute star.
He was a world champion, though.
He was an absolute star.
He's your guy. He's your guy. So you explain, sorry.
Yeah, no, I just put him in there because I remember when he came into WWE and all at the time, he was absolutely monstrous, and he had this, you know, we all remember the brilliant vignettes and stuff like that, but he's a guy who served his time, and like, he was absolutely brilliant. And you know, even when he was doing the suit and shirt and tie stuff and all, he was absolutely brilliant as well. But I just, when I think back on Mr. Perfect's career, I think of one, a career that was cut very short, in terms of when he had arrived at the stage, and two, I suppose timing was everything as well. He was very unlucky with his timing in terms of when he came up and stuff like that, because there was so many, they were stacked with talent at the time. But I just think, in terms of underrated, it's not a slight on him at all. It's more a slight on WWE that they missed the boat with this guy. And there was a lot of talk about how he was going to be pushed towards a world championship, and I think it was Hogan or something who blocked it or something like that at the time, or something like that, if I can remember back in the day.
He wouldn't be the first guy he cock blocked, would he?
No, but I mean, I just think with this guy, I think this guy could have won the world championship definitely with Bobby Heenan beside him and stuff like that. And he could have been a much bigger star.
Me too.
And I just thought the stuff that he did. So I thought his promos were brilliant. I thought those vignettes were brilliant. I thought the character was brilliant. I think given the right circumstances, I wouldn't say he could have had as good a career as Bret Hart, but I think there could have been parallels between the two. That's why I put him on the list.
That's a great show. Was he on your list, Ian?
How about you? Sorry, no, well, no. Let me explain where I came from my list. It was more so. Listen, Rick Rude and fucking Mr. Perfect would be on my list in terms of if I was going from the narrative that you said earlier on, Darren, where it was underachievers. For me, it was more like ads that I feel are underrated within the wrestling business in terms of their in-ring work and what they actually achieved and the matches they had. So I was coming at it from the worker perspective rather than you know, what the achievements were. So that's why I kind of thought this idea would be good, because you've got three different individuals.
Absolutely. Who look
different. Yeah.
And so for me, it was kind of more of a case that in a wrestling sense, I'm like, in no way are they underrated. Do you know what I mean? But what Niall said, 100% they're underrated in terms of what they've actually achieved within WWE, I suppose. So, Darren, your next.
So, yeah,
we have Christian, so we're all agreed on Christian.
We've all got Christian, and myself and Niall have got Mr. Perfect, and I'm going to go back to Mr. Perfect's era for my next pick, which is the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
Shout. Great.
Absolutely. Shout. Absolutely loved the guy. I really felt like he was, we didn't get to see his heel run the way it should have been, you know. He always kind of reached that mid to upper card level, but he never actually blew it right out of the water. And I think, again, that's back to maybe them not rolling the dice on him and putting the belt on him and stuff like that, you know. Because
WrestleMania 4 really should have been his moment, shouldn't it?
That was his opportunity to be as big in the game as he could have been. Yeah, absolutely. And like, I mean, it was such a good era for wrestling, and he was involved in so much stuff, you know. From, you know, like, don't, let's not forget, he was the man that brought the Undertaker into Survivor Series, you know. Also had when he brought his own Undertaker back to SummerSlam and stuff like that. He was just such a good character for me. But I think the company maybe didn't back him the way he should have been, you know. I think he had a massive opportunity to be a mega heel. The character and the gimmick was top drawer, really, really was. And be it Virgil or be it Sensational Sherry on his arm or whoever, he could just do it, you know. He was so, so good.
The timing of his introduction was brilliant as well, because if you remember back to when he came in, the world was broke as a joke, and he was coming in and had
Recession Central.
So like it was brilliant timing at the time as well. And I don't think they took advantage enough of it, really, you know.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I went with Dean Malenko, the Man of a Thousand Holes.
100%.
The reason I went with Dean Malenko is because, obviously, you know, history has told us, if you're a WWE fan and only a WWE fan, which is fine, I'm not knocking you for that. that wasn't aimed at you, Darren. But like no, but you know, when he came in, obviously with the Radicals himself and Perry Saturn, just kind of went. And then the other two boys shot to the stratosphere. Quote, Dean Malenko was such an important component for the likes of the Jerichos, the Benoits, you know, any of these guys that you see, any of the Lucha guys even that you saw, like in Rey Mysterio, Juventud, he was always the glue. You know, he was always there. He was the guy that you could be guaranteed that was there every week. And he was involved in some of the most important storylines in the likes of Jericho's career, even with the whole conspiracy gimmick when he wore the Cyclope or whatever it was when he went at Slamboree 98, and the whole conspiracy of him wearing the mask and, you know, wearing the whole suit and took it off and fucked Jericho over the... Oh no, he won the Battle Royal, if you remember. And he ended up beating Jericho for the title, and Jericho was doing a whole worldwide conspiracy standing outside the White House, getting kicked out of the White House with a camera in front of him. Just amazing stuff.
Yeah.
But Dean Malenko, I mean, you're talking about a guy. Listen, he was the Man of a Thousand Holes in a lot of ways. A lot of traditionalists are kind of like, well, he done too many moves and didn't make them stick enough. But if you actually go back and watch him, it was fucking fantastic. And I do definitely believe he's underrated because you don't hear his name enough. You know, and I, you know, when you hear about the greatest pound for pound or catch can guys, I mean, the Malenko family and the Malenko brothers need to be in that conversation. I don't know what you boys feel about that, but
yeah, he's nearly thought of in sub circles nearly as a jobber, isn't he? An old school jobber, yet he was so brilliant, like, and so he was way that thing there you spoke about the moves and bringing them together and stuff like that. It's just he was way ahead of his time. But he always brought a new blend to an old school idea, and his mind for the business was exceptional as well. And it's you know, I suppose when you look at those guys back in the WCW days, and we spoke about it before, Ian, on our WCW shows, where those were the guys, those were the bread and butter really of the show. And then you had these guys coming in, the Hogans and the Nashes and all those guys. So, but it's mad the way you think about it. And when you listen to Eric Bischoff these days, he speaks very highly about the importance of these guys now, years after the fact. I'm not too sure he believed that back then at the time, but certainly looking back at his history now, he certainly buys into it. But yeah, 100%. Absolutely.
Yeah. What about you, Noel? Who's your next guy?
Next one I'm going to go for is Shelton Benjamin, who I think is an excellent wrestler. As we know, he's nearly the forgotten child from that fantastic class that came up out of, I think it was Ohio at the time, or Florida Championship Wrestling, I'm not too sure. But he was the fourth or the fifth son that was forgotten out of that class, like your United class of 92, where you had Lesnar, you had Orton, Cena, Batista, and then Shelton Benjamin was that other guy. And I just think at times he's very underrated in terms of his work. He's absolutely brilliant in the ring. I can't get
I'll say one thing. That match on Raw with Shawn
Michaels. HBK, unbelievable.
It takes two to tango. And yeah, he was
absolutely.
And don't forget, all Shawn Michaels had to do was put the leg up. The timing came from the opponent. Yeah. And that's not a slight on Shawn at all in any way. But he was on my list. I knew one of you were going to have him, so I was trying to think outside the box. Yeah. He was on my list, and I took him off for someone a little bit different.
Yeah.
But without a shadow of a doubt, so underrated.
Yeah, I just find with his career, he's so solid in terms of his career and stuff like that, and even at making other guys look good. But they tend to have constantly shit on him a little bit in terms of, like, you see it even with the Hurt Business and stuff like that.
Done him a disservice, haven't they?
Yeah, they've definitely done him a disservice. And he's a guy, I think when I look at him, I think he has a real good attitude. And I think he's a guy who could be a brilliant coach. I think he would be a benefit, you know, massive benefit in a performance center. He'd be a massive benefit to an AEW locker room. I just think he's just so crisp. And the way he presents himself and all. And I think he looks $1 million as well, normally, you know.
Can I say as well there, Noel? You're just trying to give me some creative fucking booking genius here.
Mm.
And in WWE, once again, we're here every day, all day. If you want them, I'm giving you tips for free here.
Mm.
When they bring Chad Gable in, who better to have beside him?
Yeah.
Olympian himself. Yeah. I mean, you're properly getting an amateur wrestler, NCAA class wrestler, Shelton Benjamin. Put him in a stable with him. Bring it back like the old Team Angle.
Team Angle was awesome. Team Angle was awesome.
Absolutely awesome.
Shout out to Charlie Haas, by the way, who I'm going to try and get on the show soon. Yeah. There's a man who has life in order as well. And also, what a fucking worker he was.
I actually remember going to a house show down in the Tree Arena. And Team Angle was on the house show, and it was actually it was the standout match on the night. Actually, the tag match. I thought it was brilliant.
I was there myself.
Yeah, it was classic.
Phenomenal. So,
I thought I put Shelton when you mentioned it to me the other day in about this what we wanted to do. One of the more newer names that came to my mind straight away was Shelton Benjamin. So I had that on my list.
Yeah. It's a good show.
Great show, Darren.
So again, someone a little bit different. Somebody. Again, that maybe I feel like it was a combination of him letting himself down and maybe the company letting him down, you know? And my pick is Goldust.
He's okay. Well, I have him down as Dustin Rummels because that's who he is. So I'm with you. And I'm with you on both. With both companies, I'm with you. In terms of Goldust and in terms of WCW. Yeah,
they
every day,
the
all day.
They missed the boat big time, man.
Yeah.
The Goldust character, when it came in initially, was just unbelievable. You know, when obviously there was all the homophobic stuff and he was, you know, touching guys up in the ring. And he was really, you know, he was really sailing very, very close to the wind and stuff like that. And I mean, he had so much heat on him. When obviously he came in and he won the IC belt against Razor there at the Rumble, remember, and stuff like that. But like they didn't continue.
Remember
that
his program with Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 12, where they were
they
were doing the whole Pan Am view, like
I've been to the Goldust Inside the Ropes. It was on up in Belfast there a couple of years ago, and he was just such a nice guy, and his stories were just awesome. Just awesome. Like he's, you know, he's part of that Rose legacy, you know. And he's a really, really nice guy. And I suppose he probably held his hand up a little bit at times and said, you know, yeah, maybe I didn't always cover myself in glory with the way I carried myself or with some of the things that I was, you know, involved in my life and stuff like that. So like when a guy holds his hand up and says, listen, I've fucked up a little bit, but you know, I still gave it me all, like, you know, that kind of way. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. He was on my list as well, but I find with Goldust as well, I find he's kind of, what way would you put it? I don't know what way to put this. Is he a victim of his gimmick because his gimmick had a ceiling? But yeah, he was a phenomenal wrestler. When you take the wig and you take the gold and all the stuff away and you get Dustin Rhodes or Dustin Runnels or whatever way you want to do it, he's a phenomenal wrestler, and we've seen it with the match with Cody and all. He just, which is probably one of the best matches AEW has had,
or the best.
Apologies, there was a delay there. If anyone thinks we're speaking over each other, we're not. There's a little bit of a delay there, so I want to say apologies there. Go ahead,
I was throwing you far away, and you would come in. It was good.
No, I just wanted to say I'm actually back watching '94 era WCW at the moment, and he's wrestling as Dustin Runnels.
Mm.
And lads, I'm telling you here now, this guy is legit. Mm. You know what I mean? That's why I was never into the Goldust kind of character or anything like that, because it was like, I don't need that. I need Dustin Runnels in there, in the cowboy boots and in the black shorts. You know what I mean? I just need him as he is. And phenomenal. For my next one, I went with Jake Roberts. And the reason I went with Jake Roberts is pretty much for all of the above that we mentioned. I mean, you know, didn't achieve titles, didn't achieve anything, you know what I mean, in terms of, you know, probably the fame that he should have got. And again, this is definitely a case of self, what's the word?
Yeah, it was self-inflicted, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? It was definitely, he tarnished his own career by his own actions. But at the same time, you want to talk about a guy that was underrated in terms of what he could do. People only think of Jake the Snake just as a promo guy. But and listen, he wasn't your catch-as-catch-can wrestler. But good Lord, talk about psychology and doing moves that mean something at the right time. Man, everything was slow-paced. And I love that the kind of everything was just scary about this guy, because you don't know what he is. You're like, he might not look like Hulk Hogan, but he looks like he could be a threat to Hulk Hogan in some way. Like, he looks like the guy that could go and seize Hulk Hogan's family, you know, and hold them to ransom. And good Lord, Jake the Snake, one of the greatest minds.
He was on my list.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he was a guy who was his psychology translated well into his moveset and all, didn't it? So it was the perfect type of mix. I had him on my list, but I took him off because it was self-inflicted. I didn't think he was underrated, that he just sold himself short. I think a lot of people in the business held him in very high regard, but because they couldn't rely on him and they knew about the demons and everything else, that sort of dampened down his ability to achieve what he should have achieved in the business. So I had him on the list and I took him off because I didn't think, looking from the outside in, I didn't think he was underrated. I thought he was very rated, but I just thought because the self-infliction or the self-destruction, for lack of a better word, that's what killed his career, really. It wasn't a lack of talent. It wasn't a lack of promo. It wasn't a lack of psychology. It was a lack of showing up in the right mindset every day to give the company the confidence to push it to that next level. And that's how I looked at him. So that's where he came off.
That's very fair.
But a great show, Matt. Great show.
Who's your next, Lolly?
You're going to like this one, Ian, because this is one that we've spoke about many a times. Our good friend Pac, who I think is an unbelievable talent. I've seen him a number of times live. Every single place he's gone and worked, just look at his Japanese stuff. Look at his independent stuff. Look at even his stuff in WWE, the cruiserweight stuff, the 205 stuff, all that kind of stuff. He is an absolute star and a phenomenal talent and an exceptional wrestler. Unbelievable.
Goer, he's a good goer.
But yet, hasn't achieved anything near like what we believe he should. I mean, how is he not at the AJ Styles level in terms of achievements and stuff like that and all? Because he's every bit as good as AJ Styles, and in some respects, probably better.
I have an interesting take on that. I was listening to Jim Cornette talk about this recently, and he was talking about the latest pay-per-view match that he had. And no, it wasn't the pay-per-view match. It was the match that he had with Dax from FTR on Dynamite, I believe.
Hmm.
And he was saying, this is the problem with Pac. He goes, it's like, unless he's in there with the right opponent, he kind of goes whatever way. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't kind of take the ball and run with it himself. And I kind of thought about that, and I was like, that's a bit harsh, Jim. You know what I mean? I started watching some of stuff, but I thought to myself, mate, that is a good point. You know what I mean? Because he has all the fundamentals, you know, that you say AJ has, fucking Finn Balor has, whoever else, you know, Kenny Omega, all this kind of modern kind of progress with the old school twist. And I think that's his downfall. He needs to actually take the bull by the horns and show his style now. And that's his style of match. Mm. Like when you had a Bret Hart or a Ric Flair, right? And the reason that they're called the greatest of all time are people like him, even Shawn Michaels. It's because I'm not changing my whole style just for you. I'm going to still have my kind of match.
Take ownership.
I think that's really what happens with Pac. But I do agree, and I think he's very underrated. But I think he's just doing himself a little bit of a disservice also by not just, you know, grabbing the reins himself and going, like, this is who I want to be, and that's it. Because he's definitely a hell of a character. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I think he'd be more successful if he was more of his own fan.
Exactly.
Maybe it's a belief and stuff like that, but I do think still very, very under. I mean, when you look at his Japanese work, it's just
incredible. Look, you're right for putting him in. You're right for putting him. But at the same time, I think it's like you're looking at a guy like him and you're going, you need to be more confident than you are. Because you know the gimmick is good, and like putting the hair over the face and all, that's usually 101 that you're like, you don't believe this. You don't believe this. He needs to find that, because my God, he looks like Donnie my kid walking around. And he can do everything, and he needs to slow down a little bit now that he's a little bit older.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it's a case of self underrating yourself. Exactly. Maybe he needs to believe in himself more, and then that might...
That's exactly it. And then promoters will go, well, he is our guy. Because, I mean, I think he's better than pretty much anyone they have in the company on his day. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Is there a small case to be made that when a guy is that good all the time, he can be underrated? That you didn't maybe see him? Because, like, his in-ring work is phenomenal. And it's always been pretty much phenomenal. You know, like, he's never gone through a phase where, you know, he was completely... where you've seen him put a string of bad matches together and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like sometimes that success can hurt people, because people, like, I don't know whether... Like Niall said earlier about that glass ceiling, like, has the glass ceiling kind of set his head a little bit? Because, you know, what they're expecting from him in comparison to what he's put out there, like, they needed to be at a completely different level. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you what I think about
people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, you it exactly makes sense, because exactly you've hit the nail on the head there, Darren, because realistically for me, I would love to go back in time and tell people, like, you know, Finn Balor, Prince Devitt. I would love to tell people like fucking Pac not to go there. Don't go to this fucking NXT place. I mean, look, there's one wrestler out there out of all of them that got the name in Japan, and that's Kenny Omega. And his stock hasn't fucking dropped at all. Because you know when you're going to that show over with Vince that it's a 50-50 shot. You know what I mean? It's a 50-50 shot. All of your stock here in Japan, you're the hottest thing on the independents. You go over here, you're taking an absolute risk. And look, it worked out for Finn Balor for a bit in terms of in NXT, but then you bring him up and now he's just, you know, a kind of a jobber.
I suppose you could look at it though as well, that if you do go in there and you do have like somewhat of a run that's credible, it does raise your stock, even if you are let go and you are released. We've seen a number of wrestlers go out there. They can command a lot more money and stuff. But I think with Pac, I think the biggest problem with Pac has been it's not his ability. It's where the company put his placement on the card. That's where I think we have a problem with Pac in terms of, you know, the underrating of him, if you like. That's where I find it is. It's where they've placed him on the card. It is not a placing on the card that justifies the ability of the man.
And do you think maybe at times he's not fighting for himself enough in these meetings and in these, you know what I mean?
That could be the case.
I think that's exactly.
Yeah. Well, we know there's a lot of wrestlers go in there as well, and they're very comfortable with the contract, and you know, some boys. Yeah, they're happy to be there. They've arrived at, you know, they've arrived at the mountain, and if that mountain is a cruiserweight tournament or a 205 live or whatever it is, and that's what they want, then that's what they want. It's whether your desire. I mean, you look at Chris Benoit and you look at Pac, and like, tell me what's the difference? Benoit sailed to the top of the mountain, became world heavyweight champion. Pac was comfortable as a cruiserweight or as a 205 guy or whatever it is, you know what I mean? So sometimes you do have to go and kick Vince's door in and say, listen, I want more.
That's exactly it. Well, do you know what we're doing? We're going to get down to the top five here. So why don't we take a little break? And when we come back, we're going to give our top five, and we'll give the reasons for us. We are. By the way, lads, this is actually super exciting. I'm actually enjoying this. This is better than I thought it would be. So, we're going to take a little bit of a break. Pause for the cause, if you will. And when we come back, we're going to get down to the top five. Welcome back to the Four Podmen, where we are giving you our top 10 underrated wrestlers. And we are over to Darren now, because Darren also has another little gem for us here, which I heard off camera. And I can't share it with you. So only you can do it, Darren. Go for it.
I do have another little gem. It's actually not a little gem. It's quite a big gem.
Well, most of them are, to be fair.
Well, no. I'm talking big from a physical point of view.
That's what I mean. Most of them are big.
This guy is certainly the biggest we've had on the list so far.
Who we got?
We have...
Swoggle.
Vader.
Big Vader.
We have Vader.
We have Big Van Vader?
We have Big Van Vader, yeah.
My man, you know what? We sing from the same hinge.
Have Vader, man, because Vader was he the greatest big guy out there? I think he was.
If so, can I just say one thing? I'm watching it all currently at the moment on WCW. I'm watching his main event stuff with Sting, with Terry Funk, with Ric Flair, especially with Ric Flair. You know, the little thing that separates him from Bigelow is that he was there all the time. And, you know, the key component that he had as well was he had Harley Race beside him. Good Lord, have you ever seen some of those Harley Race bumps that he used to take for him sometimes on the apron? Oh, my God. This lad isn't even meant to be wrestling. And Race is just flying over the fucking... Oh, my God. Oh.
Big fan, obviously, the stuff he did in Japan. You know, he tore it up in Japan. Let's not forget that. WCW, another big statement there from him. And then even when he made it to what we'll call the dance, you know, like some of the stuff he did with Shawn Michaels, I'm like, you know, for a guy of your size, you're not supposed to move like this, pal. This isn't normal, you know.
I always thought the stuff with Michaels could have been better, but obviously Michaels would have been a moany little bitch at the time, and we've seen all the, you know, we've seen some of the unprofessionalism with Michaels there, you know, stamping on his head and stuff like that in the ring and taking advantage, which is wrong, which we can all agree with. And we're like, there's no way you would do that in a street situation, Sean, you know. But then you look at his work, with Taker and Diesel and stuff like that. He was such a great worker. Such a great worker. And you're right, his program with Sean should have been so much better. Well, he was able to hang with Sean. Not a bother.
Athletically, even athletically, to be able to hang with him was phenomenal, you know. And like the music was super, you know. The music really, really fit the character and stuff like that. You know, we had obviously the singlet and stuff like that, and when he put the bull horns on and stuff like that, just
it's unbelievable. Time, it's Vader time, you know.
It was quality, man. Absolutely love him. So Vader is on my list.
Yeah, I mean, he's not on my list, but do you know what? I wish he was. It's that's a fucking great show. Niall?
I had him on my list, but he's another one I took off because two-thirds of his career, I felt he wasn't underrated. I thought he was very rated in Japan. I thought he was very rated in WCW. I think most workers in there thought he was phenomenal because of his size and the stuff he could do. So I think when Darren comes in, and it's something Darren spoke about at the top of the show, when he went into WWE or WWF or whatever you want to call it, that's when it kind of slid a little bit. And not because of him, but because
politics. Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, I had him on my list, but because he was a god in Japan, an absolute god. When you go back and you listen to look at his old stuff,
and I suppose he was a world champion, wasn't he? He won the world championship in WWE, didn't he? Or did he?
I don't think he did.
Not in WWE, I don't think.
No, he didn't.
We know he was in WWE. I just wasn't sure.
Yeah, and he held pretty much everything there was to hold in Japan as well, right?
100%.
So
he should have been champion of WWE for sure. You know, and I'm actually annoyed at myself now because usually I pride myself on being a wrestling historian, but for some reason I had it in my head that he was the WWE champion. But you can kind of forgive me for that a little bit because he was so in and around that main event level all the time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like, do you remember the Fatal 4-Way match with him, Taker, Bret, and Austin?
Yeah.
Where he bled like a motherfucker. What a great show. I'll go with my next one, and we won't spend too much time on this one because obviously we want to let people go to bed. Lance Storm, I went with, and I think all round in general, I think he's underrated. You're talking about a guy who in the ring was as good as absolutely any of the guys that came before him. I mean, definitely technically better than the likes of Jericho and stuff like that. Didn't have the charisma, as they used to say, but then again, they used to work that into his angle. And I thought you could, what's the real difference with him and Benoit? One was more chiseled and the other wasn't. Because, like, let's be real, with Lance Storm, he had that kind of, he didn't need to say much, you know what I mean? And the thing is, I'm going to say this here, and this will be maybe controversial to some people. I rate him higher than Benoit because he's more original than Benoit, in my opinion. As I said, Benoit is a carbon copy of someone, whereas Lance Storm has his own thing. And that's the truth. Benoit is a carbon copy of someone that was still, even to this day, greater than him. It's just that Lance, didn't get the rub.
Yeah, I think with him, it's kind of a bit like Pac as well, isn't it? You can't imagine Lance Storm knocking at doors looking for a push.
Exactly.
He was always very comfortable in that kind of that mid-card section, but always put on a solid match. I don't know what Lance Storm was, a weird one. He was a brilliant wrestler, but I could never take to the flat top.
Actually, do you know what? Here's a really weird thing. I was literally about to say, maybe if he didn't walk around with the flat top, people might have took him a little more seriously. Like, you just don't feel like...
Head, shouldn't he, early on?
Yeah. There's no way anybody should have let him walk around with that flat top. He looked like your typical, like, in the mid to late 90s. Like, you know when an American white guy was trying to be an American black guy? Like, we're not going to say the word, obviously, but,
Vanilla Ice. Vanilla Ice.
Well, yeah, with Vanilla Ice. But there's another way of
putting it. Like a Sting fanboy. Like a Sting fanboy.
Yeah.
And you were just like, oh my god, what is this guy doing with the flat top, man? Just get rid of the flat top, and the fade. If you're not like,
it worked for it worked for Sting, and I will hear no bad words about Sting's flat top.
It worked for Sting about 10 years earlier. Even Sting was quick enough to realize that was gone. the walk was also weird as well, wasn't it? The walk, he always walked like he had a Snickers in his jocks.
And Sting also had the face paint, though, which killed it a little bit because he got on side with that. Storm was
also fair.
Storm.
Well, it only lasted her about the first minute of the match, though.
Storm was a phenomenal worker, I must say. As in, and as you said, technically he was very, very gifted. But my God, I've got a can of Coke Zero here that I think has more personality than Lance Storm. And that's saying a lot.
Mm. I just think you can say the same thing about Benoit. You know what I mean? Other than the push that he got, I mean, like, when we talk about, when we talked about the Eddie Guerrero show, and listen, I love Benoit. Anyone that knows me knows him.
There was a lot more the rabid Wolverine, the savagery to Benoit. Mm. That's Storm.
But again, he was marketed that way. I think you could have done something like that with Storm in a different way. All I'm saying is, technically, I think pound for pound, which is where I'm coming at it from. This is what makes us all kind of see it differently.
Yeah.
Is that I think Lance Storm could match any of them, you know, move for move.
And I think definitely move for move, you're spot on. But I think the strut on him and I think the flat top wouldn't have made me fear him the way it would make me have feared Benoit in terms of that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Package him differently.
I could definitely see why he's on the list 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, and that's what I wanted to say as well. You know, I don't feel him was passing on, but with all that kind of stuff that happened with him, we're not here to talk about that. But my point is valid. Like, Chris Benoit was a carbon copy of someone, whereas I saw a lot more originality from the likes of Jericho or a Lance Storm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose when you look at wrestlers, though, I mean, you could go down through a lot of wrestlers and still say that you see aspects of them in previous wrestlers and stuff like that as well. So I wouldn't.
Yeah, I do, and I don't. But I think when you're talking about Benoit, you're literally looking at a carbon copy of someone. It had to be mentioned even by Jim Ross on pay-per-view.
Benoit was the first one to say himself that he was like very influenced by Dynamite Kid and stuff like that.
Well, no, he said he wanted to be him. Yeah. So it's like, unfortunately, he took it one step further, so we move on.
Am I up?
You're up.
I'm up, am I? Yeah. Tully Blanchard. Tully Blanchard I had next on my list. The reason I've Tully in there, as people know, I was a huge Jim Crockett Promotions fan and NWA fan and stuff like that. But Tully Blanchard, again, not dissimilar to the boys in the mid-card on the WCW side of things, but he was that guy way before those guys, if you like. He was the worker, him and Arn, in that Four Horsemen. Not to say that Rick wasn't the worker, but they often got smothered by the stardom of Ric Flair, if you like. But each day and each
week. Do you want me to put one of mine in with it so you can tell the whole story?
Go ahead, drop it here. Okay, so, perfect. Yeah. So we're going into Brian Buster's territory now.
We can talk about them individually and
there's parallels between the both of them without a shadow of a doubt. But I just think Tully Blanchard, I was a huge fan around that US title and TV title and all that kind of stuff. And I liked every aspect of the card when I watched Jim Crockett Promotions and stuff like that. But I thought Tully was a phenomenal worker. The work he did with Magnum, who was a friend of the show, who we had on the show, of course, his stuff with Nikita Koloff, the stuff with the Garvins, all the stuff he did. And the funny thing about it, even when it was trigger point time for the Horsemen on any given show to send out a show to keep you gripped for the next week, he was the guy running in first himself and Aaron Anderson to do that run in or that attack or whatever it was. And he brought a snarly aggression to it as well. He was the schoolyard guy, wasn't he, really? But I just think he was a guy who they could have done so much more with, especially when they got to WWE. And when they came into WWE as the Brain Busters, I thought that was a stroke of genius with Bobby Heenan as well. But it kind of flattered to deceive, really. You know, it could have been so much more. So that's why I had him on my list.
Very nice.
Yeah, I put Arn in there as well for that very reason. I mean, I watched little intricacies that you would look with Arn Anderson's work. You remember when he'd do that, he'd pretend to punch you, and then you'd duck, and then he'd get you into the fucking, to the DDT. That's some of the best work I've ever seen. I mean, those two guys, they were excellence of execution. You know what I mean? They were very much in the vein of professional wrestler that I like. You know what I mean? In terms of their punches meant something. Everything they did meant something. Both of the guys. And without a shadow of a doubt. The Brain Busters, both of them. Tag team environment and individual environment.
It's an interesting concept that you brought in, Aaron, as well, because I was looking at the network the other day at this Ruthless Aggression series that they're doing, which is absolutely brilliant to watch. But they were talking about Triple H and Evolution and how Triple H was struggling to come up with a name for the group, and he went to Aaron Anderson, and Aaron Anderson came up with the Evolution name. Absolutely brilliant.
I'm telling you, Tony Khan, you want the booker, you want the guy to put matches together, there you go. You're already employing him.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Controversial so that, moment. Are you ready?
Go for it.
Like a bit of controversy, right?
You definitely do, as the last episode has told us.
Sid.
Continue.
Well, I just dropped the pen now. Sid.
I've dropped my eyes. Continue. Sid.
Go on. Give us your reasoning on this now.
I just think, you know, you had so many possibilities with him. And like, obviously you got a slightly better run of it in WCW maybe than WWE. But like,
he had a great run of WCW.
Huh?
He had a great run of WCW.
I'm with you now.
You've got me thinking on which.
But like when he came into WWF originally, and we were seeing, you know, he was taking out these jobbers every week and he had them on the stretcher, and like, you were genuinely thinking, holy shit,
he
man,
scared this guy, me. He scared
this
me.
Guy cannot be stopped. This guy is going to be the master and the ruler of the world, right? And I was like, I love this, right? But and then you'd see him obviously with Hogan and stuff, and he'd be like, Hogan, and all, and he'd be like, oh man, I just thought he was tops. And I just think, certainly in WWF, and I know, like, obviously he had a much better run in WCW, but I still think if you look at his whole career, he didn't reach where he should have reached for my money, especially with his look. Like, he looked phenomenal.
He did. He looked a million bucks.
You know, he looked a million bucks. And he, you know, anytime, it was very rare, but anytime he was the face, it was an absolute waste. What a waste, booking him as a face. He was a heel all day long. And, you know, that's the way he should have been booked.
I'm with you, Darren, because in fairness, he genuinely scared me. Even say I was 12 years of age when he was, I was like, how's the Hitman going to beat him?
Right. I think he's definitely underrated and undervalued in the companies he was in, maybe. Okay. Niall is like so much scary.
What you said there, Ian, is how is the Hitman going to beat him? Once he dropped that promo about having half the brain that someone else had or something like that.
I'm
thinking Hitman's way more cleverer than him. He beat him, no problem. You know, I just thought, if anything, I'm going the other way with him. I thought he was overrated. I thought he was put into positions that he had no business being in at all. I agree he had a great look, and I agree there's some things he could do. And his running...
Here's a question. Two men with similar heights and very, very similar parallels and obviously had a program together. Who was the better of the two, Kevin Nash or Sid? Like, really, who was better?
Yeah, I'd have to say... And it pains me to pick either, but I'd have to say Kevin Nash. I'd have to say Kevin Nash, but it pains me to pick either.
And you are not a Kevin Nash fan, so that's like...
I'm not a Sid fan either. But it's, to be honest with you, I just, you know what I mean. No disrespect to either of them and stuff like that, but just, I don't know. You know, one had enough friends to hang around the money enough. And the other one didn't have as many friends as he should have. And that was it. And I just don't think it's... I don't know.
When you get stabbed by Arn Anderson, that's usually the problem.
Listen,
all right, listen, we move on.
I just dropped Tully Blanchard. I'm a Tully Blanchard guy. You want me to pick either Kevin Nash or Sid? Come on.
I did say it was going to be controversial. I didn't want to, you know, just, you know, tiptoe through the daisies there. I said, listen, let's drop some bombs here. That's what the people want to hear.
I threw that out to Niall just to fuck with him a little bit. Like, who do you prefer? Oh, good Lord. Right, so we're getting down. My next pick is actually Fit Finlay.
Yes.
One of the most underrated wrestlers of all time, without a shadow of a doubt. Again, we're going back to kind of my neck of the woods in terms of pro wrestling, in terms of how I was trained in the business. And in terms of, you know, what I kind of like in the business, I mean, Fit Finlay, without a shadow of a doubt, was you know, this was a guy that was matching up with Benoit and WCW, matching up, you know, because obviously we got to see Finlay with Hornswoggle and stuff, and a lot of WWE fans are only kind of like, oh, who's this old Irish guy? What they didn't get to see was the Finlay of the years before, you know what I mean? And he was an absolute staple in WCW television, as you remember, Niall.
Yeah.
He was always a TV champion. Why? Because you could be guaranteed to have a great match with whoever the fuck he was wrestling. And of course, he was an agent now in WWE. And again, there's a reason for that. Yeah, without a shadow, without one of the most.
Got let go, didn't he, though?
Did he get let go?
Yeah.
Is he with AEW now, is he?
No,
probably.
He's not anywhere at the minute, I don't think. But he definitely got let go from his WWE deal a while ago.
He must have taken time off then, because there's no way that man shouldn't be working in broadcast television involved in pro wrestling.
He was he was the man who set up the National Guard promo, if you remember.
Yeah.
Quality.
Yeah. 100%. And he's one of our own. You know what I mean? He was always the one out there wearing the shamrock as well, even WCW and stuff like that when he was feuding with him Regal. Even the two of them teamed up for one time. But yeah, that's my one. So who's next?
Back to me again. Arriba, Tito Santana. Made my list.
He was nearly on my list. So close.
He was on my list.
Tito. I just thought, what an absolute brilliant wrestler and an unbelievable worker, and a guy who found a way to connect with the fan base in a really, really big way, except the company didn't grab him and win it properly. And, you know, to show the man and the company man that he was, when the hassle went down with Tom Zink, with Rick Martel and the Can-Am Connection, it was Tito who stepped in to become Rick Martel's tag partner and become Strikeforce. And I just think he's a man who, you know, when you think of his work with Macho Man, you think of the stuff he did at that level, at that IC level and stuff like that. No, he was phenomenal and had a really, really good following. And I just thought at times he was.
Here's a question for you, Niall.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you, because I thought about this and then I couldn't put either or in. Who's more underrated, really, when you look at their career? Tito Santana or Rick Martel or both? Because Rick Martel, for me, for my money, man, he had everything.
Yeah.
Mm. Absolutely everything. Take the arrogance away from it and all. You put that gimmick on him, he can run with it. I mean, 1992, fucking nose slapping on the face, him and Shawn Michaels, fucking Wembley Stadium. Yeah. Absolute quality. Stroke of genius by the boxers. But who? They're kind of one of the same, aren't they?
Yeah,
kind of
almost like Strikeforce. Definitely parallels between both of them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think you could actually have had either one.
Yeah.
But I think it would have been a waste to have both because they're so similar.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
I suppose the only difference between the two is I'd say Tito was probably more of a company man. And I think Rick would have been the kind of guy who probably would have spoke up a little bit more. If anything, is there any kind of a difference?
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So that was mine. Tito Santana.
You still had someone similar. So, Darren, why don't you give us one?
We're going to take a trip, boys, to Cobb County, Georgia.
Go on.
I know exactly where.
The big boss man. The big boss man was such a good character, man. Really, really good character. Also, he was going through the Heenan family at one stage and he was, I'm going to get to you, Mr. Perfect. And just really underrated and undervalued, you know. I definitely think he should have got gold in WWF. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He had that. Obviously, the physique was a bit different, but he had a build of a world champion. You know, he was a big guy, you know, and the fans were really, really behind him and stuff like that. Again, he went to WCW, probably had a slightly better run of it, but again, I still think he's, when people talk about, you know, guys that didn't reach their potential, I think he's definitely one of them. And I think if you don't reach your potential, you're pretty much underrated. Eno was absolutely horrified. It's all right, Ian. I'll hug you later.
No, it's okay. Listen, I'm a Bossman fan. I was a big fan. I was a fan of him in WCW as well. In WCW, he actually got a little bit more of a rub because he got to work some bigger matches. Like this.
Yeah,
he did, and you got to see how good a worker he was. Listen, I have no problem with you picking Big Boss Man because he was a Ray Trailer. Obviously, he was a hell of a bumper as well. That's one little things that I look at with Ray Trailer. He's very snappy in his bumps as well for a big man.
Yeah,
very, very, very underrated, and rightly so that you put him in there. So no, you're gonna kind of get any qualms from me with that pick. For my next one, I went with, and I'm not going to call him William. I'm going to call him Stephen Regal, Lord Stephen Regal. One of the most underrated professional wrestlers, if not the most underrated professional wrestler of all time. This guy, anything you need from him, he was able to do. I mean, talk about character. Talk about charisma. Talk about being able to go in the ring. There is nothing. Nothing other than maybe he wasn't a bodyguard, which is fair enough, but he didn't need that. I'm just going to leave this out with you guys because for me, Stephen Regal, William Regal, whatever you want to call him, is
he held that WCW TV title for quite a while, didn't he? If you remember, in the mid 90s, and he was such a good heel, like he was really, really good.
One of the best ever.
He's on my list actually. But a massive WWE guy, WWF guy. I didn't watch a whole lot of, like, I watched stuff, but I didn't like get into it the way I did because it just wasn't my gig. But like, I turn it on, you know, Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and I'd be watching WCW in the afternoon, and he'd come on, and you just think, Jesus, this guy is super believable. Like, you know, he really, really was. I think the physique definitely held him back, didn't it? You know, and probably wrongly, because I mean, like you say, he was such a good worker, he was good in the mic, he had everything, but obviously with lacking the physical aspects, maybe he was overlooked slightly at times for maybe a push when he should have gotten it.
So who's next?
Yeah, I'll go next. Next on my list. Well, I've only two left now because we've crossed over a little bit.
We all have two. I've only two as well.
You've only two as well, yeah. My next one is Cesaro.
Yep.
I think a guy who I suppose we could pull parallels with Pac as well, insofar as this is a guy who's a phenomenal athlete, has a fantastic look. He's a phenomenal wrestler, no doubt about it. Given the right circumstances and the right company behind him and stuff like that, could be an absolute superstar. But again, I think he's a guy who's comfortable in his position and not a guy who's kicking in your door wanting more. And I think there's so much more to Cesaro. We talk at times about peeling back the layers on Roman Reigns and peeling back the layers on a lot of these athletes. I think there's a lot of layers that could still be peeled back on Cesaro to make him a phenomenal superstar. But I'm just not sure whether he wants it as much as we want it for him.
I don't think so. I think he, like a lot of other superstars, are just happy to be getting paid. And I think the company has probably zapped the fucking love for the wrestling.
He does look like that at times. He looks like he's had his soul destroyed. You know, he's
going through the motions.
Yeah, but I do think that can be the WWE way at times. That, you know, obviously because things are done a certain way around there, and you know, if you're not in a certain bracket, it just doesn't, you know, the rub of the green doesn't come your way. And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that you're right, you're wrong. It just means it didn't come your way. But I am surprised you come up with Cesaro, because I mentioned Cesaro a few weeks ago in one of our other podcasts. And I think I remember you saying to me, is it not a bit hokey, you know, swinging a guy around the middle of the ring? And I was like, well, no, I don't think it is, actually.
No, that element... potentially, and maybe it's that swinging around the ring kind of stuff that maybe holds him back for the legitimacy of him, that makes him a little bit underrated. But I think the body of his other work, I think the stuff he does with Sheamus and that stuff with the bar and all that kind of stuff, I thought at times that was really, really good. But I just don't think, I think if Cesaro retired tomorrow, I think he'd look back on his career as being a time where he could have achieved a whole lot more. If you go back and you look at his Ring of Honor stuff as Castagnoli and stuff like that, I mean, the stuff he did with Chris Hero was absolutely phenomenal. And I think sometimes, as Ian says, sometimes you get to the dance and you get comfortable in the money and comfortable in the position, and you don't, you no longer want to kick in the door and cause a problem in terms of where you want to get to. And I think a number of times they've tried to bring him up a notch or two and bring him to that higher dance, if you like, and he's kind of got there and then decided he wanted to go back.
But, but did he get there and decide that he wanted to go back, or did he get there and someone else decided this isn't the way we want to go? Because I don't, I believe, and I bring it back to the point that I made a second ago about, you know, he does look like a guy who's just, you know, can I take this anymore from WWE? Because I reckon this guy has kicked in a lot of doors and he's gone into meetings and he said, listen, I can do A, I can do B, C, D. And to the point where they probably even told him, all right, pal, we'll give you the ball. We'll give you the ball. You run with it. And then I just think at the last minute, somebody somewhere, probably Vinnie Mac, decided, you know what, let's not give him the ball. Fuck it. Like, we don't need to, you know, and let's just piss on him again because, you know, he's under contract and he's going to take the money. And, you know, but I completely agree with you, by the way. I do, absolutely. I just, I think, with Cesaro or Claudio, whichever you want to call him, he's definitely been hard done by. I think he's a guy who could go off to TNA or could go off to AEW and be a legitimate world champion and look really, really good. Like, he reminds me of a guy maybe like Christian, who didn't get that rub, but that went to maybe TNA and became a big champion and went in a run and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I agree with you, man.
Yep.
Right, well, we need to wrap this up soon, so I'm going to give my last two.
Yeah, because actually, I don't have any left because I've doubled up a couple of times.
Right. Well, I've got two, and I've got DDP, and I've got Jeff Jarrett. And my reasons for that is because if you look at both of them, they were definitely underappreciated, I think would be the word, and underutilized in WWE without a shadow of a doubt. When we look at the King of the Mountain and we look at Slapnuts, Jarrett wasn't main event level in anybody's fucking book. He could wrestle with anybody. I dare say, look at his match that he had at that In Your House pay-per-view with Shawn Michaels. He can hang with the best of them.
Yeah.
Friend of the show as well, Jarrett. So shout out to Jeff. Good to see him doing well as well these days, guys, isn't it? You know, because we saw Jeff obviously had his own issues and stuff a long time ago. So it's great to see him do well now and have his own podcast and stuff. But even when you listen to his show, My World with Conrad Thompson, again, friend of the show. I know we're name dropping now, but it's important that we do this. It just comes across as just a legit guy. I mean, a guy that was brought up in the business. There's no bullshit about him. Do you know what I mean? A lot of the bullshit that's been about holding Vince up for money and stuff, and then you get the context, you're like, okay, well, yeah, this is another WWE kind of swerve on like, oh, Vince's feelings got hurt because somebody done something to him that he done to fucking other people a million times. You know what I mean? And it's nice when you see the worker get the fucking power back. So that's where I come from on this one. But Jeff Jarrett, without a shadow, it was politics with Stone Cold. Him and Steve had a problem, you know, from early days because, you know, he said something to Steve that Steve didn't like, and then that was it. You ain't going anywhere in this company, kid, kind of thing, you know. And people forget that about Steve Austin, that he was a very paranoid individual. There's a lot of comparisons with Steve Austin and Macho Man, actually, just in a different way. He wasn't locking his missus in a room, but very, very similar, you know, paranoia that, you know, I can't have anybody threatening my spot kind of thing, which is understandable.
it's a common theme in the business.
Absolutely, it's understandable. And
it's a common theme in every business. Not just in that one.
Oh, no, 100%. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. If you're up on top, you know that someone is trying to fucking take your spot. So I get it. But Jeff Jarrett, look, I mean, he was the only thing holding that company together in WCW as the champion and having great matches with the likes of Booker T coming up there, still getting matches out of the likes of fucking Scott Steiner, who was just proper juiced up at that point. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So Jeff Jarrett is on my list. And the reason I put the two of them in there is like DDP, what a story. I mean, a man who just loved the wrestling business so much that like had a dream to be a pro wrestler and didn't actually properly start until he was nearly 40. You know what I mean? Like, think about it. I debuted in professional wrestling when I was 18 years of age. I'm now 37. DDP started a year ago in my timeline. You know what I mean? And that's when he made his career. So it's absolutely phenomenal what DDP done. And he was a student of the game. I mean, Triple H calls himself the game, and rightly so. Rightly so, because he was and is. But DDP, you want to talk about a student of the game, learning how to do the craft. I mean, when you go back and watch, listen, Goldberg's best match that he's probably ever had is arguably between him and Bret Hart. And I would dare say that the best match Goldberg ever had was Halloween Havoc 98, and that was, you know, that was DDP.
Yeah, no, good show.
Yeah.
Hell of a worker.
I think, only based on, you know, being underrated is probably because he came to the dance so late. You know, like if he had longevity on his side as well, I don't think we're talking about him in that bracket. But I just think because...
But WWE underrated them. Think about it from that side. They brought him in.
Yeah, but he was also like, he was super injury prone as well. Like by the time he got to WWE, like he had
injuries every week. Didn't miss dates?
Huh?
Yeah, because of the age. Yeah, because of the age. Yeah.
You know, yeah, because like, but if he was in WWE at 25, I think he'd have been a massive star. Massive, you know, because I think he was a guy that kind of Vince could have got behind because he had those crazy eyes that, you know, you just knew when you put a microphone in this guy's hand, he was gonna make everybody sit up and listen. You know, such a good talker.
What about Jeff Jarrett as a heel? I mean, Jeff Jarrett as a heel, not many people garnered as much heat as he got when he wanted to get it. You know what I mean?
Jeff was a really good heel. When you were able to get
really good heel
as, you know, as Double J, and you're wearing these light up sunglasses and a cowboy hat, like, you're good at what you do, you know? You really are. Like, there's only so many times you can hit someone over the head with a guitar and sell it and make it work, but he did it.
He was one of the biggest parts of getting China over. You know what I mean? Like, and even when you listen to his podcast, that's how you know he's a nice guy. Doesn't even take credit for it. He talks about China being as over as she was, but without that component of Jeff Jarrett there, you know, basically saying, woman is, what was it? The woman belongs in the kitchen. You know, it's just like coming out with the guitar and the shades, and him and Owen Hart were just, you know, perfect. It was, yeah, I mean, I think that's why. Those two, for me, are really, really overrated. I mean, underrated, should I say, because I'm so happy that Jeff Jarrett got those amount of world title runs in WCW, because he really deserved it, you know what I mean? And it showed that he was top dog there, and it showed his, what he could do, and obviously he went on to, you know, give us another legacy with TNA and stuff like that, which is for a future episode. Like, but, yeah. I mean,
don't forget Global Force.
What about, I know you're a big Jeff.
Definitely with Jeff. I mean, if you look at even his stuff in TNA, where he carried the world title over there, he carried it for a long time in TNA at a time where he recognized that a lot of the guys over there on the roster, they weren't ready. And he had to build them and coax them and bring them along and stuff like that and all, you know. So, yeah, absolutely.
He did.
Yeah, so he...
Do you remember what he said to AJ Styles? He said, AJ, He goes, if you don't know your value, this is what he said to AJ Styles. He goes, and I'm your boss. You need to start putting your value up.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because when you go on the pastures new, nobody's going to do it for you.
Mm.
You got to fucking know your worth. And he goes, and you're worth more than this. And I was like, that's actually really cool, you know? So there you go. Anyway, that's my list.
Yep. No, it's good. Well done. Great list.
We're all done.
We are. We are all done.
We are done. That's a hell of a list. There's no way, in way, shape, or form, that you could turn around and say anybody's, you know, guy didn't deserve to be on there, to be honest with you. Especially when you're coming at it from the narrative. It's all personal. You know what I mean? It's all personal interpretation. So if anybody does agree or disagrees with our lists, please let us know in the comments section, whether it be on YouTube, preferably it's on YouTube, or it's on any of the sharing platforms that we have, because we are available on Twitter, of course, at D4PodMen, which I assume is correct, Noel.
At T-PodMen. At T-PodMen, yeah.
T4PodMen.
Yeah.
There we go. So, yeah, please give us a follow on there as well. But, gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed this. Yeah.
Was a beautiful way to spend a Sunday evening, gentlemen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. But until next time, for me, your host for a day only, Ian the Dynamo Kelly. For Niall, your usual host, the shopkeeper himself. And of course, the Darren, the man of a thousand figures. We are over and out.